Hi, I'm John Billingsley, and you are listening to Beyond Track Podcast.
What are some thoughts of yours towards the whole, like, is Star Trek getting too woke?
The idea that a show that exists to push the boundaries in terms of what is acceptable and what is it, and what it should be like just part of our human condition, which is, you know, everybody on the fucking ship, everybody on the fucking ship, as long as you're nice. To me, it's like you can't be too woke.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Beyond Track Podcast after a whole bunch of hiatus. This is our Saturday night live stream coming at you live. We are going to be talking about Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2, Episode 1, Strange Energies. In the house with me, I've got Big J. Big J, how you been?
Good. I don't know about you, Dag, but I feel rusty for some reason. Like, we haven't done this since January, doing an episode review, and it feels like it's just been a long break in between.
It really has.
What have you been doing for the last 6 months?
I'm actually been planning a wedding.
Oh, my wedding. Okay.
So that's been a huge thing for me. But also, you know, we have released a couple of riff tracks with some of the other folks, and that's been a lot of fun. Just the wedding planning and working, that's been things for me. What about you?
So I've been undergoing the Kolinar ritual.
Ah, yes. Purge all emotion.
Yes.
Bring logic. But sure it's Kolinar?
or is it Kolinar? Yeah, it's Kolinar. No, but not, in all seriousness, it's been family, work, things like that. I am also going to be, have been planning a wedding as well. So, got engaged last month, and I swore I would not do a third, swore up and down. And so guess what I'm doing? Going in for my number three, third time's a charm, right?
Or is that
second time's a charm?
We could skip over. You could just skip over three and go straight to four and be like, I didn't do it a third time. This is the fourth. It wouldn't make any sense, but you know, it sort of circumvents the trope.
Yeah, it may be. So what are we doing? And this is our first Saturday Night Live stream. So you get it? Saturday Night Live stream.
I'm sorry, Jay. We just got a cease and desist.
I hope we do. That would be great because the press and the credit that we would get, it would just skyrocket.
I really agree.
I'm hoping Lorne Michaels gets wind of this and is like, what the hell? Well, we've got a couple viewers here with us, and thank you. Thank you for joining us. We're going to have to work on building back up the audience, start pounding the social media again and get things back going. I think that 6 months,
you know,
was...
We can just blame CBS for not airing any new Star Trek in the last, 8 months.
Oof. Can we blame them?
Yes, we can. Because right. I don't want to take the blame for that.
No, me.
I see ELH is in the house. Nice to see you, ELH. Thanks for joining.
Yes. Thank you. All right. So I guess we're going to get on to it.
No, this is great. This episode opens with a huge bout of nostalgia with two Galor-class Cardassian warships, one in the foreground, one in the background. And we focus in on an installation that appears to be hidden on a well-developed asteroid in the middle of a belt.
Hey Dag, you know what? This message from ELH, the audio's coming in fine. You're a little okay. I guess we had some buffering issues, so.
And we're good again, maybe.
Yeah, I hope so. And if not,
for those of you that don't know, Jay's on the East Coast, I'm on the West Coast, and our powers are combining into the buffer for whatever reasons that probably Reg Barkley wouldn't want to have to fix.
We need more buffer.
We need more Miles O'Brien.
Oh, yes. So I'm sorry.
The buffer.
Sorry. Hey, hate to interrupt. That's my bad.
Okay, so you know, we zoom in on this installation, and we are now on a set that looks remarkably familiar to the Chain of Command Part 1 and 2 from Star Trek: The Next Generation. Somebody's under a bag, and a Cardassian interrogator comes in, pulls the bag off this person's head, and it's Mariner. And curiously, she's wearing a sweatband. How did this even happen?
Well, the sweatband was a good touch.
Right. You know, and the interrogator and her have a little bit of a scuffle for a second, where we start to realize that Mariner is having a very psychiatric moment. And that just sort of calls back to the episode wherein she reprogrammed Boimler's holodeck program to exert some therapeutic energy.
Is this the new form of therapy in the 24th century?
You know, I would love that. Just like, here's an avatar of yourself. Go beat it the F up. All right. That was cathartic.
Yeah.
So Mariner and this Cardassian interrogator get into a fight, which seems a little too easy, but as it's a holodeck program, you know, safeties are on and deemed. What's the discovery level at? Like one? Intensity program of one. Mariner kicks everybody's butt here, and that is not really part of the therapy. She's here to, you know, come to peace with her mom, the issues she's having with her mom, and the fact that for the last few months they've been getting along, and it's freaking creepy. She walks past a holographic representation of Boimler, who calls out, "Help me! They keep reminding, trying to throw lights in my face," which is, you know,
that's a great Picard, reference. Of course.
They back out along a large plank and end up on the bridge of what appears to be a Reliant class starship, NCC 1877. We find out later that's the USS McDuff. McDuff mean anything to you, Jay?
Let's see. It does. McDuff was in the deleted scene of Nemesis, was going to be the new first officer on the Enterprise E. No, wait a minute. That's not right. I can hear it in my head. I can hear Picard saying McDuff.
McDuff was from that one episode conundrum where they lost their memories and there was that weird first officer chilling around that, you know, everybody, you just follow along and you're like, oh yeah, cool. New guy just on the ship. Wait, he's the first officer? What's going on here?
Which you knew immediately that something wasn't right there. Right. I'm rusty. That's, you know, I've been trying to get my brain back into Star Trek mode, and yeah, I could hear.
You let your brain leave Star Trek mode?
Well, no, it never really leaves. Just I'm getting old. That's what it is. I'll just come out and say it. Yeah, they get you.
You are not that old. You're like 5 years older than me.
Well, I mean, when you say it like that.
Yeah. So this ship blasts its way out of this interrogation facility, and we see a whole slew of familiar and nostalgic starships in here. There's a Jem'Hadar Bug. There are even some like fan cast ships in here. So many different ships, Bajoran, Klingon Birds of Prey, Starfleet Runabouts. There's like the Delta Flyers in there three times. And it's really cool to just see all these ships sitting here like that. Other than that, you know, we go back to the bridge, things are exploding around, the Cardassians freaking out, and then you hear that similar noise of somebody chiming at the door, and the holodeck doors open, and there's Jen the Andorian, everybody's favorite character, except Mariner, who informs Mariner that it's time to go to the ready room, your mom wants to see you.
And the doors close,
and Mariner's like, I know we're not supposed to like have interpersonal problems and stuff like that, but I really hate that Andorian, which harkens back to Gene Roddenberry's statement about, you know, we're not supposed to have interpersonal problems on the ship. Everyone's supposed to just get along.
Makes for bad TV. You've got to have some of that interpersonal conflict because if everyone just gets along, that's not good for drama. But hey, what do I know?
That's why there was all those possessions in the original series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fade out to our new intro sequence. I don't know if anybody noticed that or not, but the ship has had a little bit of a textural remodel makeover.
Did it?
Yeah, it did.
I watched the opening.
Is a little different.
Okay.
the colorization, the yellow band is a little oranger now to reflect that operational status.
Mm-hmm.
Most crazy, on the saucer section, there are now escape pod hatches activated all around the saucer and over the bridge itself. And these little escape pod hatches look very much like they did on the Enterprise E, which is really funny because back in the last episode, Captain Freeman was like, I really hope they don't just go all out and sovereign class my ship. And the Enterprise E being a sovereign class, I thought of this as a callback.
Yeah, yeah, another one that was a good callback.
Another one of the great moments was the Romulan fighting sequence in the opening credits has been augmented. Now there are Klingon birds of prey fighting as well as pack-led harpies. That's what the official name is for these giant Goliaths of collage vessels.
Harpies.
Harpies. You know what a harpy is? It's a bird of prey. Nyah, nyah,
nyah.
Mythological, but it's a bird of prey.
I was thinking of something completely different, but go ahead.
No. Oh.
Oh. Oof. Oh my.
Oh my. Flashback. The Cerritos is chilling over a planet. They're finishing up second contact. Everything looks good. Mariner and the captain are basically just getting along better than anything we've ever seen, and they're having this whole conversation in front of Ransom, who's still like, Captain, I would like you to give me the orders. And she gives him the orders to tie everything up and let Mariner have free reign to do pretty much whatever she wants down on the planet.
You know, over to the... I'm sorry. I just wanted to interject
real fast.
So this was something that I really was not a big fan of in this episode, was just they weren't keeping it professional. In my opinion, the captain and her daughter, it was a little too laid back, and she's an ensign, and basically her mother is kind of allowing her to circumvent chain of command and has the first officer basically blowing him off. I don't know. That was the impression I got, was this is getting to be a little bit too much nepotism, especially when your main character's father is an admiral in Starfleet, your mom's a captain. It's, you know, am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong, but I also think that was the point of the sequence. As we see later in this episode, Mariner and Freeman under duress, you know, begin to talk about those things. And that leaves me hopeful that in the next episode, they'll have a little more distance between them, or, you know, something like that.
Right.
But as far as the audience is concerned, we'll get to those scenes when we get to those scenes. Flash over to the barracks. Rutherford and Tendi are chilling. Rutherford's eating a pear. Tendi's really worried about Rutherford. He's doing all these weird things that he didn't used to do before he lost his memory in the last episode. As you recall, Shax sacrificed his life to save the little baby bear from the
poor Shax. Yeah, poor Shax.
And Badgie. Hmm. In the meantime, Mariner has a whole cache of crazy stuff on Boimler's bunk. They've got the old TR-88 bags, those tricorders. There's a 3D chess set and a dress uniform and all kinds of stuff just racked up in there. It looks like a cask of Romulan ale, too.
Well, they turned his bunk into a closet, basically.
Is that what your closet looked like at home, Jay?
No, I was clean. I was a clean person. I kept things pretty organized and tidy. If stuff is a mess, I've got a little bit of that OCD, so prefer things are kind of, well, at least some kind of semblance of knowing where things are at and what their role is. So
right on. Well, it looks like Mariner could take a cue or two from you.
Yeah.
Rutherford goes off, and Tendi straps on a giant med pack that looks like the old EMH author mobile emitter from that one episode of Voyager, and follows Rutherford. Down on the planet, the away team lands. Ransom is just trying to get these new people to pick up their subspace phone number. We find out these new people have a strong relationship with numbers, and this number that they get can't just be any number. They have to vibe with it. Mariner is ignoring everything that Ransom is telling her to do in favor of her own thing, which she's carrying around a sonic pressure washer, like a sonic shower, but for pressure washing buildings. And it looks like there's a new suck up who's trying to please Ransom all the time, doing everything Ransom says and not getting any pleasure for that. So I hope he becomes the villain of the show. Just like this old man that looks like the EMH with the mustache should just be like, I am taking control of everything.
Wait a minute. That'd you think great. The bald guy with the mustache that works in engineering, you think you're talking about him?
Yeah, Stevens.
Stevens.
No. This is a different guy. This isn't the bald guy that works in engineering. He looks like the bald guy that looks in engineering, but he's not the bald guy who looks in engineering. Guy's a red shirt.
Well, that's why I thought it was the same guy, just in a different department now with the red shirt.
No, because that guy's the chief of engineering.
Yeah. Okay.
They wouldn't bust him down to like executive assistant.
Right. Well, I'm going to have to. Okay, you're right. You're right, because the engineering guy had more hair. I can see him now. Yeah.
In the meantime, Mariner starts sonic spraying these buildings, and we see some really cool murals for the audience. If you don't know why she's sonic spraying these buildings, it's because they didn't bother to clean all the stuff off after their industrial revolution, so everything's covered in soot and ash. There's some really pretty murals showing some really awesome wildlife. It's like their planet's version of a Wyland. If you've ever heard of a Wyland.
No, what's a Wyland?
My mom's a big fan of the Wyland painter. He does all those murals of aquatic life all over the place. Yeah.
Okay.
They're good things. Good stuff. She manages to spray all the soot off of some kind of weird orb that turns into some kind of weird solar powered device that ends up going crazy. Lightning fills the sky as the orb and the monuments holding it light up, and a lot of energy starts shooting out of it. A lot of strange energies. What's the name of the episode?
Oh.
Ooh.
That's our new technical definition now. Strange energies.
And as much as Ransom can't stand Mariner, he also is a good first officer in that he comes running after her to get her out of the way. But in doing so, he gets jolted by one of these energy lightning bolts. And, shirt gets ripped. I was watching that with Cal, and Cal was like, hey, it's about time a man had a boob window on his shirt. I was like, that's the end of the episode right there.
Who gets their shirt ripped more, Kirk or Ransom?
I don't know if we've had enough episodes of Lower Decks to beat Kirk's record, but, you know.
We might not have it. It feels like it's getting close.
It's a good survey to do.
Yeah.
Should figure that part out. Random Trek knowledge. Who's ripped their shirt more, Ransom or Kirk? To'Ana, the doctor beams down and is like, his whole body's been filled with strange energies. And the captain's like, what are those? And then we get a little, pop up on the display that shows Gary Mitchell from the original series also had a bunch of strange energies.
Yeah, good throwback. Gary Mitchell in the Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Yeah.
The second pilot for Star Trek actually aired September 16th, 1966.
Yeah, after the Man Trap.
Mm-hmm.
Ransom's like, I'm fine. Then dusts himself off, stands up. His hair's a little like Super Saiyan. And then his eyes start to glow and he starts speaking in an echoey voice and he starts levitating off the ground. And he uses his strange energies to not only heal himself, but get rid of his boob window. And then he just starts doing crazy magic blasty powers. He's shooting really strange energies out of his hands. Captain Freeman is like, what's going on down there? To'Ana's like, I think he's bench pressing all this stuff. Because, Ransom doing all those workouts and lifts and stuff. He's doing triceps and biceps with trees and lumber now.
I wish I could lift trees and lumber. I just want powers like what he had to levitate. Just give me that. I want to fly.
Well, flying is great, but falling, you have to account for that.
Well, you can't make it practical. Really think about it. Yeah. What if you could have anything, what would it be to fly? Okay. So you're going to fly to work.
How fast are you going to fly? Like, are you going to have like a bug screen out in front of you catching all that?
How can you see where you're going? I'd still have to stay low enough to be able to follow the highway.
Captain Freeman gets a call from her husband, Admiral Freeman, who's like, hey, how you doing? And she's like, everything's fine. This contact is going great. Meanwhile, you know, Ransom is terrorizing a planet. The Admiral says, hey, you guys did such a good job with the Pakleds that you might get your own capital ship. And she's like, absolutely, thanks. Nice to see you. And she rushes back out of the bridge. Mariner, you get Ransom back to normal and make sure that these people choose a phone number.
And she's got her priorities straight.
In a shuttle bay, we have a new shuttle now. Remember that we, this is the shuttle that Shax kicked out of the Pakled ship. He threw Rutherford on it and they picked it back up. So the shuttle has been recovered. Nice to see it. Tendi is giving Rutherford some electroshock because she thinks that if she shocks him enough times, it'll jolt his memory and he will go back to the person he was. And there's a little bit of please don't date that person you're dating included in there. So some tension on that front.
I got to tell you, my favorite part of this scene was the chair out of nowhere, like in wrestling. Just happened to have a metal chair and whacked him right in the face. Whack. With.
Yeah, and his hair pulls a Riker. And if you don't know what I mean by that, if you've ever rewatched TNG, you know that Riker's in distress when his hair is a little undone.
Oh, like, yes.
His hair has usually got that perfect coif. But if he's got a little bang and a loop, it's all over. Riker is in distress. Rutherford is done with this electroshock therapy stuff, and he leaves. And Tendi just puts together what I can only call like a hypospray rifle. It's insane.
Is that's new medical equipment?
Cocking action.
We're gonna heal some people today.
Like hypo sprays in it. I'm just like, okay, Tendi's on the rampage. Back on the planet, Ransom is just converting everything into workout equipment, and he's like, I'm gonna make a whole species of Ransomites. And several dozen people in witness end up with Ransom heads that are glowing, and they all want to be bros too.
The Ransom Bros.
Yep. But he's basically just reshaping reality as he sees fit. Even T'Ana tries to give him a hypo spray, and he turns the hypo spray into an ice cream cone.
Oh, see, now I'm in the mood for ice cream. Because I got ice cream, cake, but I haven't had a chance to have dessert yet. Kind of had a late dinner.
Not in the mood for ice cream.
Okay.
But I don't have any.
Well, you should have it delivered. You got a pizza on the way, right?
I mean, it's right here.
Oh.
In any case, Ransom uses his reality shaping powers to give himself what I can only call some really cool duds. Like I told Cal right away, I want this costume cosplay. Give it to me. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's this white robe with this gold features and highlights and sleeves. And it's just beautiful.
It is. I'll take one too.
Ransom's having none of any of Mariner's BS with this sonic shower gun and, you know, flips everybody down. And then he does something really crazy. He detaches his head and sends it up to encounter the Cerritos.
Now, that was freaky, if I can say.
It was a little freaky. Head,
it was. I thought it was maybe a little much, but
it's not the first time we've seen a detached head in Star Trek.
That's true. Data had a detached head. They found his head in that mine, and it had been there 500 years, and that was a big mystery. So,
if you remember when super smart Barclay plugged himself into the Enterprise, and they ended up at the center of the galaxy, and the Cytherian head showed up right there on the bridge? Interrogative, you know?
Right.
It's not really out of the realm of Star Trek.
And the God of Shockery in the Final Frontier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What does God need with a starship?
What does Ransom need with a starship? So we zoom back up to the Cerritos, and we see Rutherford is talking to the Trill ensign that he'd been talking to in the first season. This is apparently their third date, and he's saying, you know, hey, because I lost my memory, I hope you're okay with me repeating stuff. And she's like, I totally know what that's like. When my sister was joined, she couldn't stop talking about how she was joined. Which kind of highlights that any kind of time there was an episode featured on Jadzia Dax, she always had to remind everybody that she was a Trill.
You would think that that would be known. Like, why would she have to remind everyone? But yeah, and I'm glad that they are doing this in this show, spending some more time on the interpersonal relationships with the crew, because it seems like in Star Trek, we do get some of that, but dating when you are on a starship, it's, I don't know, what would that be like? I would think that it's kind of like at work, you know, you go to work, go to the office every day and start dating a coworker, but at some point that's got to become awkward, because if there's a breakup, it's like you are still on the same ship. But to me, it seems like there really aren't any other options. You're in deep space, you're traveling. It's not like they have online dating in the 24th century, at least not that I know of.
They do have online dating in the 24th century.
Well, but then how do you meet?
Loxana met that one dude who didn't want her to have a traditional Betazoid wedding over the internet, and she'd never met him before.
Oh yeah, the uptight dude.
They had traded profiles. Oh, it's like 24th century Tinder.
Well, yeah, I think she catfished that guy.
No way, dude. Loxana's a catch.
Yeah,
I would totally be like, yeah, if anything, that dude catfished Loxana.
Exactly.
Tendi runs in with her hypo rifle and starts shooting wildly at Rutherford, interrupting their date, and Rutherford bails from the mess hall and keeps on running. Meanwhile, Ransom's floating head arrives at Cerritos and starts biting it, headbutting it. On the planet, his body continues to convert the local monuments into workout machines, in which his little Ransomites are heavily at work. Gains.
So an incline press, a bench press, and hey, at
treadmill,
least yeah, treadmill. Yeah. I mean, that can't be all that bad, right?
A lift and squat machine, a yoga ball.
Oh God, I hate it. One of
those. I don't know. It's like a pedal. It's like a bike, I guess, but it has a fan on it for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do I look like I go to the gym regularly?
Well, from past experience, I can tell you, yes, I've been on those, the exercise equipment that has the fan right there in front of you. I think it was either treadmill or, yeah, I think it was a treadmill. So, that was when I used to go to places like Fitworks, Bally's, and I don't know if those names are familiar out there on the West Coast. That's what we
had here in the Midwest.
We had
a Gold's Gym.
Gold's. We had that. Well, you know what though? After you go through all the heavy lifting and being in the factory when you're playing football, it's kind of like the rest of your life. You just take it easy. But you know, I've had spurts here and there where it's okay. I'm gonna get into shape, do some lifting, and so forth. And it's like, oh, squirrel. And then before you know it, you know, now you're eating junk food, which I try not to do. I'm stress eating.
And here's me looking at my pizza again.
Well, don't let it get cold. Go ahead.
It's going to be fine. I'm going to get through this real quick.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Incentive to get done eating.
So Tiana is on the line with Freeman and she's like, hey, you know what? If we just really chalk this guy full of energy, he'll short himself out. And so Cerritos fires phasers at him and he just gets more powerful. And Tiana's like, just do it more. And he's like, ah, and he bites the freaking Cerritos. It's hilarious. What's even more hilarious about it is that as Rutherford and Tendi are running through the halls, you can see the head of Ransom flying around, biting it, and getting a really clear look at his stubble. And, you know, just it's just hilarious that this is happening around them.
But yeah, it's biting, trying to bite the ship like it's a falafel or something.
I mean, your godlike power and your weapon of choice is to bite the ship.
Well, he's okay. Just a head. He's just flying head. What else was he going to do?
I mean, I guess if you're a god of power, why not bite the ship?
Right.
Rutherford and Tendi have another close moment where Tendi tells him that he doesn't have the thing that she said he had. She just is scared that if he could like all these things that he didn't like before he lost his memory, that maybe he would stop liking her. And she was like, and he responds to her and is like, wait, you just use science to come after me with all the weird stuff? That's great. That's what I would have done. Okay, Rutherford. And they're friends again. Meanwhile, Cerritos is still firing on the head of Ransom.
Well, they've got to do more than just firing the phasers. Don't they have the navigational deflector array that does whatever the plot wants it to do? Mix it up a little bit.
You could do like a graviton beam or, you know, a neutron beam.
Oh, of course. Right.
Any other kinds of beams.
Every kind
of
beam.
Lots of beams. Ransom starts to manifest a cloud with fists in the middle of space, and Freeman starts to just talk to him and realizes that he has been feeling undermined as first officer with her relationship with Mariner and advocacy of Mariner just basically getting away with whatever. If you recall back in the episode where Temporal Edict, where they learned about buffer time and she started timing everything.
Yes.
The Boimler effect was drafted to say that the crew needed to do whatever they needed to do to get the job done. So we see Freeman kind of giving Mariner a lot of leeway on that front. And Ransom is not liking it. Freeman uses this as an opportunity to flatter Ransom. And it works for a moment until Ransom gets an ego of it and is like, you know what? You're right. I am a good first officer. I should be captain. And commences to bite all over Cerritos
once backfired. Again. He's got a big ego. I think he's very full of himself. And he's like a Chad. Just reminds me of if there were still fraternities in this time period, I'm sure he came out of one. He seems like that kind of guy.
Possibly. In the middle of conversation, Ransom crosses his eyes and looks like he's about to vomit when his hands and his head start plummeting through the atmosphere, burning up as they collide into the ground. He's clearly in distress, but we don't know why until we get back to the planet. And we see that Mariner is giving him shock jock treatment with her foot multiple times.
Oh.
His head shrinks back down, reattaches to his godly body, in which his powers begin to wane. His cool white and gold robe reverts to his standard uniform, and he vomits up these strange energies. He kind of thanks Mariner for that. He looks like he's himself, and then suddenly the strange energies reassert, and she commences kicking him
again
over and over and over and over.
I think there's a reference we missed with the rock, dropping a rock on him like Kirk did to Gary Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and that's what they do here is they drop a rock on him just like Gary Mitchell. That uses the rest of his strange energies to survive. All of the changes that he had made revert, so all of their museums go back to regular buildings, the gym equipment reverts back, and all the people who were the Ransomites become regular people again. Ransom is now recovering on the Cerritos. Freeman is glad to have him back. His buddy Stevens is going to read him Nightingale Woman. Now, I don't know if that resonated with you, Nightingale Woman. Gary Mitchell quoted this poem as a result of his increased mental capacity from being in contact with the galactic barrier. The poem itself was written by Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, okay. When you said Nightingale, I was thinking of, wasn't there ship Nightingale? Wasn't that? No, the Raven is what I'm thinking of in Voyager, the ship that.
There was a Nightingale episode. I just don't remember what it was. In any case, in canon, Nightingale Woman was a poem written by a guy named Tarbold in 1996 on the Canopus planet.
Mm-hmm.
By the 23rd century, it was considered one of the most passionate love sonnets of the past few centuries. This, in fact, was a poem that was written by Gene Roddenberry himself back when he was an aviator as a love poem from himself to his airplane.
To the airplane? Oh, okay. I didn't know that part.
In Freeman's office, Mariner and Freeman, who had recently expressed how much they didn't like working with each other, make up, and however, they do still express how much they know each other, because Freeman's like, you're ready to go, and Mariner's like, there's security coming to get me, and Freeman's like, yes, you're right, you're going to the brig. And she's like, I do what I want. In the brig, Mariner is sitting in the brig. There's a little little art of a castle in there. I couldn't read the words on that, but
it's a Mariner HQ.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Mariner HQ is the brig, and she's hanging out with Rutherford and Tendi, and they're sort of recapping the events. And then they're talking about how cool it is that Boimler is on the Titan, and he must be loving it. Segue over to Boimler, who's screaming at the helm as the Titan is evading a set of, now he called these the harpies, but they weren't the big ships, they were little ships, but okay, we're just going to call them harpies too.
Okay,
so you know, Riker continues with his jazz metaphors, which I love, in ordering an evasion course to punch a way through these ships that are pursuing him. Boimler has no idea what's going on. He's constantly asking, what does that mean? Where are we going? What does that do? Somebody says, you know, prepare for gluonic warping. And he's like, prepare for what? And the ship enters an anomaly in which everybody becomes warped. And, you know, if you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy, when they do their warp jumps, they get all spaghettified. And as Riker spaghettifies, he says, I love my job.
That was probably my favorite part of the episode. I love my job.
It is so great. I don't think I can get enough of Jonathan Frakes, even if it's only in you know, cameo appearances, which is mm-hmm. totally fine. The focus of the show is definitely on the Cerritos. Overall, this was a really fun episode, again continuing that trend of Lower Decks just being very self-referential, self-aware, sort of meta about a lot of situational humor in its plot.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping the action up. I mean, you only get 24 minutes to convey all this stuff, and I think, as we said in the first season, in 24 minutes they drop so much stuff, it's like an hour of
it
content
is.
To unpack.
Well, yeah, if you remember the first season of Lower Decks, we spent about an hour plus on a 24-minute cartoon. And I'm just trying to help speed it along because you've got pizza there calling your name. But I did put up the number for the Beyond Track hotline where you can call us and tell us your thoughts about the episode or just about the season in general. And so if you're listening to this or watching this, it's 513-279-2344. Dag, I'm pretty sure I probably quizzed you on this one. What is the significance of 2344?
It's the year before Worf was born. Booyah! No, it's also the year the Enterprise C was destroyed.
Yep. Yep. You got me. Well, went missing, presumed destroyed.
Oh, no, it was destroyed. It got back and they destroyed it.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I mean, of Star Trek Online.
Timeline, and then it went back. Oh, right. STO kind of messed with some of that.
It did. Yeah.
Time travel.
Oh, God. Time travel. But you know what? I don't know. I'm not sure how I felt about this episode. It just, I wasn't overwhelmed or underwhelmed. I was just whelmed.
I thought it was fun, right up until the conclusion of the ransom thing. And this has just sort of been something that's on my mind, but, mm-hmm. I'm kind of over the trope of kicking a dude in the balls to for comedy.
Yeah, I think that's...
It's not like I'm going to go crazy or weird about it, but it's just one thing where it's like, can we not? Because we've been doing this for 40 years now. Right. And I remember in the past thinking this was funny, you know, with...
Oh, sure.
The slapstick humor and things like that. But, you know, it does sort of perpetuate a sexual violence thing, and I'm just trying to get rid of all of that. I don't want to see any of it on any media anywhere for anybody. But you know, you're right. That's my only nitpick.
I think that, well, I don't know. They could have come up with some other kind of, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. I get what you're saying. I think maybe this episode was a little too referential to itself into sci-fi. It's just the line Mariner said of there's sci-fi things happening when the energy blasts were coming from that obelisk that she had to jump out of the way from, where that ransom saved her from. But, you know, I'm sure... It's the first episode of the second season. I'm not going to pass any judgment yet. Let's just see how it goes. But
well, you know how second seasons go, though. Like, what was the first episode of the second season of TNG?
The child. Yep, the child.
This is way better than that.
Where Troy becomes pregnant by a light energy being, kind of.
We were just talking about some kind of trope about this.
Oh,
I remember watching that with Cal, and Cal was like, turn it off. We are not doing this today. You know, for a second season episode, I thought it was pretty good. Again, that was my only nitpick. But I can see how you might feel that it was a little too derivative of things we've already had enough of in Star Trek.
Well, and it also could be... I might have been a little grumpy that morning, didn't get enough sleep. So wait to see how next week's review goes for our Saturday Night Live stream.
Yeah, absolutely. One more space face that has appeared in Star Trek history. Mm-hmm. Nagilum.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Nagilum.
Nagilum.
Now I'm going to be thinking
of
the
first episodes I remember seeing, which is weird.
Oh, that was your first episode.
Okay. No. I don't actually know what my first episode was. Mm-hmm. I just know that Nagilum was one of the first episodes I remember seeing.
So right. It's
like second season, 1988. I don't know.
First season was September of 87 to June 88. So
yep.
Second season started kind of late because of the writer's strike.
Field. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a writer's strike.
They had to pull a lot of stuff out for that season.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, they did. Well, before your PC gets cold, we want to put up our social media sites where folks can find us and follow us on the internet. So we've got patreon.com/beyondtrek, twitter.com/beyondtrekpod, or @beyondtrekpod. And that's where Dag lives. Dag is our king of Twitter.
Thanks.
Just working that Twitter crowd, the Twittersphere. It's getting back out there and getting our listeners and viewers back on board. Hey, we're back, you know, got to get everyone around again. And of course, we've got Facebook. We're all over the place on Facebook, Beyond Trek Podcast at facebook.com/beyondtrekpodcast and Instagram at Beyond Trek Podcast. I think we're on it. That should be all of it, right? All the social media, just about, except for we should do TikTok videos.
I do TikTok videos, Jay. I started the Starfleeters.
Oh, that's TikTok. Okay.
My own personal group of Star Trek obsessed people like me.
We're everywhere. There are dozens of us, literally dozens. And also want to give special thanks to our contributors. Stephanie Baker is a Patreon and Anchor contributor. Thank you. S. Tam, who's a Patreon subscriber. Anne Marie, Patreon as well. And Jim Cook, who contributes on Anchor. So we thank you all very much for doing that. That is a great thing. And Dag, is it too early to have predictions of what you're thinking for this season?
Wild and zany. However, the name of the next episode should really, really help, because it's called Kayshawn, His Eyes Open.
Oh, all right. I'm looking forward to that one.
The cadence with which the Temerians spoke. Mm-hmm. And in the preview, we did see a Temerian come aboard as a crew member, which will resolve a whole bunch of canon debates and discussion about what would it be like to work alongside a Temerian if everything they had to refer to was some kind of meme.
Yeah, I can't wait. This if one I need to see.
As long as he says Picard and Dathan at Eladril, I'll be satisfied.
Me too.
That callback. Maybe that's a little too on the nose.
All right.
Jay, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
I love hanging out with you. I'm so glad we're back to doing this again.
Me too.
I hope to see you next week when we review that episode as well. Viewers, thanks for sticking by us. We really appreciate your time. And remember to boldly go with Beyond Trek Podcast.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your air conditions and surrender your ears. We will add inspirational and hilarious...